Hey guys, thanks for checking out the Access Point podcast. Whether you stumbled upon us for the first time or you're a longtime listener, we thank you for coming and listening, and we hope you enjoy. Good to be back with you guys, and we're actually finishing up our series, America. Steve, for those of you who missed it last week, Steve talked about freedom and what freedom meant, what brought us the freedom we have, and then what, as Christians, are we willing to stand up for and even die for to protect the freedoms we have, not only as Americans, as citizens, but as Christians? And, you know, what does that freedom in Christ mean? And then what does it mean for us as Christians, adding on again to what I talked about the first week, was with this idea of patriotism and being free, and how can we as Christians live as patriots and Christians? Are they synonymous? Are they in constant turmoil against each other? Or can they work hand in hand? As I told you guys the first week, patriotism, depending on who you say it to, carries different connotations. You know, even in a Christian context, one side is like, look, you can't mix that with Christianity. It doesn't go hand in hand. Whereas some people, some Christians think, if you're not a patriot, you're not a good Christian. And if you're not a good Christian, then you're obviously not a patriot like you should be. They think the terms are synonymous. So the first week opening up, we talked about, what does it even mean to call yourself a patriot? And remember, I reiterated the fact that it's God first, not country first. And in fact, I wrote an article, it's in the newspaper, it came out last week, where we talked about the same thing. What does it mean to say God first, not country first? Now, to many patriots, that doesn't blend. You say, no, it's country first above all else. But what we learned is that's actually nationalism. That's you saying, I don't care about any other person. I don't care about where they grow up. I don't care where they live, where their identification says they're from. If they're not Americans, then they're second rate. And many Americans do feel that. And that's not the patriotism we should have. That's not the sense of unity we should have with any other country. And I know our country and our president right now is going around saying it's America first. And on some of that, I understand where he's coming from, and I think it's a good thing. But as Christians, our call, yes, we can be good patriots. We can love our country, so long as that country, our love of the pride that we feel, which I do, I have great pride in our men and women and in our country and in our flag. I mean, those of you who know me know that. I fly flags on my laptop keyboard. I fly on my book bag patches. I've got the flag all over the place, and it's okay. But my love for country doesn't trump my love for God. And it doesn't say, well, because you're not from America, that God's love isn't the same for you as it is Americans. Because one thing we have to clear up in our churches today is that America is not the new Israel. We're not God's new chosen people. It's been taught that and preached that, when the truth is, no, God died for everyone. So the sense of nationalism that heads us up against all other countries is incorrect. And that is a form of patriotism we have to avoid. But a patriotism that says, I love and support my country, I pray for my leaders, I support the men and women who fight overseas and the ones who are protecting my security here, that is okay. That is good. That's healthy. But that sense of patriotism has to only come second to our love and focus and devotion to God. And so that leads to where we are today, which is going to this idea of government, what government means and what our roles as Christians are when it comes to government. And one thing that I began to think about when it comes to government roles, government abilities, government power, is really thinking about one aspect of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. If you think about it, back in the early, actually, 1990s, they started to realize, look, this thing, it's been leaning a while. We knew that, and it's okay. It's been a huge tourist trap. But it's actually becoming dangerously so. So what they did is they went and took liquid nitrogen and poured it and just plugged different holes around it and actually froze it around. So they said, look, maybe that'll hold it while we do construction. They added some cables, and they said, if we can just get an inch closer to center, we're going to be okay. You know, tying these just huge cables, trying to bring it back in order. And, you know, their goal wasn't to straighten it out, because then they lose their tourist attraction, right? But their biggest goal was, look, let's prevent complete destruction. Let's prevent catastrophe. And they did that, and so far it's lasted a little while, you know, right at 30 years now that they've had it still standing, leaning, but standing. And thinking about that, I'm like, you know, that's really how our government works. It's focused on, look, we're not going to fix it all. We're not going to be perfect. Some think they are. They're not. But their goal is, look, we're gonna really prevent total anarchy. And so God establishes, in my mind, governments to maintain order, to add that cable. And they say, look, we may not get it back on center, but we're going to at least maintain a sense of order so it continues to stand. And that's how government is. Again, it's like that. We know everything's not going to be fixed. Not everyone's going to be happy. Not everyone's opinion is going to be fixed. Not everybody's idea of what government role is going to actually work out. But with government established, at least we can prevent this thing completely collapsing underneath of us. At least we can maintain some sense of order. So that's what government is established for. That's what it's all about. And if we think of it that way, then you know, government is essential. Government is a good thing. And I know some of you are like, anything government is wrong. But there are some beauties to it. And those of you who work for the government, I'll continue to pray for you. But government can and is a good thing. And as we'll see in a little while, it's established by God for our sake to maintain a sense of order, not to become a perfect union, but to become a little bit closer to center. So that's what I want to talk about today is what does it mean for our government, even though it's functioning like the cables on the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You know, we know, again, if anything, they're just trying to prevent this total destruction. So if that's their role, if that's their purpose, how do we as Christians support a government that, yeah, it may be helping us avoid anarchy, but it's passed some laws that we as Christians, we don't agree with. It's made things that I don't think should be legal, let alone moral. They've allowed these things to be law. And I'm supposed to obey the law. And if the law says it's okay, then how do I stand up to that? How do I live under a government that doesn't always support us? They know we as Christians are against or should be against abortion, but they've made it legal, and so we're like, well, what do we do? Well, Christians don't support same-sex marriage, but our government says, no, let them be. And we say we love them, we support them, and we care for those people, but look, you're going against our morality. We're going against our structure. I understand you're trying to keep this thing on center, but it doesn't feel like you're supporting us. It feels like our Christian values are diminishing as the world's sense of social justice is increasing. And it is a tough question. And I've heard, you know, a lot of people bring the issue up, especially when it comes to patriotism, you know, because it is assumed, well, if you pledge to your country, to your flag, then you have to be taking something away from God. Or you have to be saying, you know, country only, country first. But no, there's a blend in my mind. You can be a Christian and be a patriot and support and pray for your government, even when that government doesn't always go in the direction it should, as we see fit. And so with that idea, we have to realize, look, it's not a 21st century. It's not even an American question that we as Christians have raised. In fact, Paul dealt with this question in the very first century, the early church days. They were already saying, well, as Christians, it's our duty to be this uprising, to be the one who helps this corrupt government collapse so that we can have our theocracy or whatever their sense of, you know, God-controlled government should be. You know, this is our role, our job. But Paul has some different words for that. And the words that he talks to this early church when it comes to Rome and their rule and their corrupt government fits very well with us as Christians in America. So I hope it is able to answer your question of, well, how do we support a government that doesn't always support us? Because again, early on, very early days, these Christians again said, this is our job. It was my God-given right, my talent, my skills, my duty as a Christian to overthrow that evil authority. Whereas some Christians already were saying, look, we're supposed to obey, we're supposed to respect, we're supposed to love despite. And so we just follow the flow, go with the flow, do whatever they say, you know, act in whatever way they say fit. And if we do that, then we're obeying God, we're obeying country, and everyone's happy. So we had already two sides of this coin here, and there was a lot of division already in the church. And so what Paul does, he says, look, we've got to clear the air on this, and I need to show you what it means to be a Christian living under the rule of, in their minds, it really was, and as we see history proves, was a corrupt government, corrupt leaders, leaders that didn't care anything for Christians at all. So as rough as we say we have it in America, it's still nothing like they had under Roman rule, where Christians were being beheaded and persecuted and killed because they believed in this man named Jesus. And so this is really a guide for us in answering the questions of how do we support or live under a corrupt or immoral sometimes government as Christians, as moral individuals. And so I want to read, it's out of Romans 13. It says, be a good citizen. All governments are under God. Insofar as there is peace and order, it's God's order. So live responsibly as a citizen. If you're irresponsible to the state, then you're irresponsible with God, and God will hold you responsible. And see, Paul was really hitting this point home. It says, if you're disobedient to your law, to your country, then you're disobedient to me, to God. And that really hits home, doesn't it? Because we think we have an excuse or a way out. But in this case, he's saying, look, these orders, these people were set here by God for a reason. It says, duly constituted authorities are only a threat if you're trying to get by with something. Decent citizens should have nothing to fear. It's kind of like when you see a police officer and you're speeding. If you're speeding, you're scared to death. If you're not, you still check your mirror out of habit, but it shouldn't be quite as scary. And you're like, oh, I got my seatbelt on. I was only going 25 over. We're good. You know, whatever it is. You know, if you're obeying the law, you don't have the fear, right? But when you're breaking the law, you're paranoid, looking over, waiting for that cop to be hiding in the bushes, right? And that's exactly what Paul's saying. He says, do you want to be on good terms with the government? Be a responsible citizen, and you'll get on just fine. The government working to your advantage. But if you're breaking the rules right and left, and I can't read the rest, because it's the right way to live. I done cut myself off on my screen here. And he says, that's also why you pay taxes, so that an orderly way of life can be maintained. Fulfill your obligations as a citizen. Pay your taxes, pay your bills, respect your leaders. I know a lot of you are like, oh, man, I thought I had an excuse on April 15th. According to Paul here, pay your taxes, pay your bills, respect your leaders. It's a good rule of thumb, right? Don't run up debts except for the huge debt of love we owe each other. When you love others, you complete what the law has been after all along. So Paul answering a lot of questions right here, clearing the air of how we should live as model citizens, as Christians. What is our duty? Even if we don't always agree with our government, how should we act? Should we try to, you know, overthrow it? Should we try to turn this into a Divergent series movie where whatever the government says, we're going to go against it, we're going to fight it, we're going to fight this order that they've created? Or do we say, well, that's the laws of the land, that's what they say, that's what we should do? Or is there an in-between where I follow my laws up to a point? Well, and I think Paul is very clear with this. He says, first and foremost, look, governments are established by God. If a government is there, it's only because God has allowed it to be there. If the leaders are in place, it's only because God has allowed those leaders to be in place. And he even says that governments are a blessing. As I said with the picture of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, it helps prevent that total anarchy. It helps create a sense of order. Even though it may not be completely in order, completely perfect, completely on center, we know it's at least doing a little bit to maintain and, you know, avoid complete catastrophe. Because what he really boils down to and he reminds us of is, look, being a good citizen is a Christian duty. That's why he talks about paying taxes, obeying the law, not running up a huge debt. You know, all these things is a duty of a Christian, duty of as an American citizen for you and I. And so if we're going to be examples of Christ, then in the eyes of our government, that first starts by being a model citizen, by being the individuals we should be in the country that we're allowed to live in. But again, what we as Christians, as Americans more than anything, have the tendency to say to this, okay, Paul, I see you're telling the early church, you know, be a good citizen. Well, this is a different time. It's a different church. It's a different country. We've got so much fighting. God, you can understand if I want to get up, I want to fight, I want to do something to make a change. And it's easy to excuse ourselves of disobedience or lack of respect when we don't always agree, when we don't think things are the way we see them fit. But realize, as much as this is a different country and a different time, the circumstances aren't all that different. Because when Paul wrote this, he was planning to visit Jerusalem. And there was a lot of political tension going on. In fact, the Jews were taking up weapons to fight against Rome and Nero. Does that sound so crazy? No, because there's Christians that, you know, want to overthrow, take up arms, and defeat this wicked government as they see it. And Paul's like, look, guys, you're not going to do anything good at this point, because right now you're under the control of this government by God's hands. He's allowed it. He may not have put you there, but he's allowed these men to be put there, and in this case, even may have been because of their disobedience as God's people. So like many Americans feel when reading these words, Paul knows, look, my advice is not going to be accepted automatically. And some of you may not be liking what I'm saying or what Paul's saying, but that's exactly what we need to hear, is that our first primary goal is first to God. But then as Americans, our goal is to be good citizens in order to exemplify a life that God has called us to live. So yes, these were tough times where Paul was writing this letter. And so it's not so much different than us. And so because of these difficult words, Paul again reiterates, look, the authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authorities is rebelling against what God has instituted. So as much as we want to overthrow, make a difference, or destroy something that seems immoral or against our standards, God is saying, look, the only reason it's able to stand is because I'm allowing it to stand. So we have to realize that. Be the citizens that we need to be, so that when people look at us, they don't say, well, the Christians don't care about the laws, why should I? Rather, they say, man, these Christians still obey the law. They still drive the speed limit. Wink, wink, right? But they still live as model citizens. So maybe that's them actually walking the walk. They tell us, you know, we should live right, and they actually are. They're following the laws of the land. And so as a general rule, what he's saying is, look, we are to obey our government, but there is one lone exception. That exception is, and this is that line that I told you that we would be looking at, you know, should we obey law completely? Yes, up to the point where that law forces us to directly disobey God's law. If our government is telling us to do something within moral boundaries, that's our duty. But as soon as that government begins to force us to take sides against God or country, it's always God first, country second. It's never the other way around. And many patriots have a hard time with that. Say, well, it's country first no matter what. No, it's God first, always and forever. Anytime that government forces us to choose or to turn our back on God, it's no longer the government that God desires it to be. And even Peter, he exemplifies this when he answered to the questions when they were telling him, look, we're not going to punish you this time, but you've got to stop preaching and talking about this man named Jesus. That's the law. That's our ruling. Peter says, look, I'm going to obey God. I'm not going to obey man. That is the only example that we see of an uprising or disobedience to government being allowed when that government is forcing us to choose sides. Or if, in this case, if Caesar was saying, look, you're going to call me Lord and God, or we're going to execute you or lock you up, then Paul's saying, look, your first duty is to God. If that life, your Christianity, is being held in the balance because of your government, then I hope your Christian life comes first. Because if our government ever forces us, asks us, demands of us obedience to them and disobedience to God, then yes, our duty as Christians is no longer to that government. Our duty is now and only to God, even if it may lead to trouble, even if it leads to persecution, even if it leads to death, as we saw with many Christians in the early church. And we still see actually today in many different parts of the world where the Christian church is being persecuted. They're being forced to choose sides. And those who choose God over country, they're having to pay the price. And really, you know, as going off what Steve talked about last week, we have the freedom where we don't have to choose. But what would we do if that freedom was taken away? What would you choose? Follow government because it's the easy way out? Or follow God because that's where your heart lies. That's where your soul is. And that's where your complete and utter devotion is. Devotion as a patriot only goes so far as it doesn't force me to choose God under country. Always God first. And that's what Paul's reminding us, trying to tell us, yes, we are to obey our country up to a point. Because there is a big difference between refusing to obey a single law or what a leader says and a huge rebellion or an uprising against that leader, saying that leader shouldn't rule. There's a difference there. And that's what Paul is trying to point out. Look, that leader's there for a reason. Obey that leader, so long as that leader's not forcing you to choose against God. Because it's not wrong to resist specific injustice, to stand up for what we believe as Christians, say, look, I don't think abortion is right. I don't think this is right. That's okay. But to simply say, because of that, I'm going to protest, I'm going to break stuff, I'm going to fight our leaders, I'm going to fight our cops, I'm going to do this and that, that is wrong. That's not an exemplified Christian life. That's not what God's called us to be. Yes, we stand up for what's right and obey our laws, but we don't tear stuff up and try to divide this country more simply because of a disagreement. But again, once that government forces you to choose God or country, that's when we say, look, my duty is to God alone, not country. Because all these civil governments, all the things that we live under, they are established by God, but are only allowed to reign because of Him. So we have to remember that, and yes, be obedient to that up to that point. And this is, again, interesting, because even I'm still like, well, it's still different for Paul than it is for us, but Paul is saying this under the reign of Emperor Nero. He was famous for persecuting Christians, and even with that, you know, the early Christians were like, Paul's going to give us a way. He's going to give us an excuse to take up arms, to fight, to stand up for what we believe as Christians. But no, Paul says, look, he's here for a reason. Listen to him. You know, Nero was the one who actually was suspected of starting a huge fire. And instead of taking the blame, saying, yeah, I did it, what are you going to do? He blamed it on Christians so that not only he would hate them, but the rest of Rome would hate Christians as well. And it helped add flame, no pun intended, to the hatred for Christianity. That's kind of where Nero's heart was. That's where his focus was. He was in complete opposition to anything related to Christ and to Christianity. And yet, under that role, Paul says that man was placed there only because God allowed him, and we are to obey that man as our leader. So as much as you agree with one party over the other, or you say, well, I can't follow this leader because they're of a different party, God is saying it doesn't matter what party they're from. He or she is your leader. He or she are the ones you're obedient to while living as a citizen of that country. That is your duty as a Christian. So again, while one might expect Paul to encourage Christians in Rome to rise up, to stand against this oppressive government and oppressive ruler, he instead says, you as a Christian are expected to obey and to be model citizens. That's your first duty as, in our case, Americans. That was their duty where they were. Even as Jews, even as now Christians, he's saying, look, your job isn't to create some kind of uprising. Your job is to exemplify me and be a model citizen regardless of who's leader. So that's the same for you and I. Regardless if you voted Republican or Democrat and you say, well, that's not my president. Yes, he or she is your president when they're elected as our country has established in its laws. And because, in this case, Trump was elected, he is our president. We are to obey those laws. We're supposed to follow those orders. We may not always agree with them. And you say, well, I had nothing to do with voting him in. It doesn't matter. He is the leadership that God has allowed to take place. Am I going to say that that was what, you know, God wanted from day one? No, but God's able to use things that happen in America, things that happen in our country. He allows these things to happen and can use it for both good and bad, regardless of who's in power, what party has the authority right now. And so as Americans, we have to realize that if Romans 13 applies to the cruel Nero, then it applies to all kings, all leaders, all Democrats, all Republicans, all independents, even though they never get elected. All those, we're under their rule. That's who is allowed to be in charge. And if they're in charge, God is saying, your duty is to be that model citizen, to be the one who stands up and lives by example. Because the early church, they followed these examples. And it wasn't just Nero that they had to put up with. They had to put up with Claudius, Caligula, and Tacitus. All these evil rulers that hated them, hated what they stood for, hated what they believed. And yet, Paul is saying, that is our duty as Christians to obey these governments, to be model citizens. And we have to realize that what Paul writes here doesn't leave room for outs. He doesn't say, well, here's a qualification of you can obey up to this point. He doesn't say be subject to the king unless he is oppressive, or you must obey all rulers except usurpers. He doesn't say, well, if you didn't vote for him, don't listen to him. Well, if they're a Republican, you don't have to listen to them. Well, if they're a Democrat, you don't have to obey them. No, he doesn't give us any outs. He says, this government is here. This government is here to help create order, maintain a sense of somewhat, you know, organization to our country, to our government. And so it's plain that Romans 13 is telling us, look, all governments that are in place, by regardless of who the ruler is, whether it's a king, whether it's a president, whether it's a prime minister, it's allowed only because of the sovereign will of God. And therefore, there's no outs. There's no excuse. There's no, that's not my president. That's not my prime minister. That's not my leader. That's not my governor. No, there's none of this excuses. There's none of this reason for uprising. There's none of this reason for rioting when what he's saying is be a model citizen. Obey the laws. He doesn't say, well, because a Republican was voted in, go break stuff. Because a Democrat was voted in, go riot. No, he says, be a model citizen with no qualifications, no outs, no justification for uprising against the government. Again, because the only excuse or reason we ever have is if that government forces us to say country first, our leader first, other than God. Then we have all power, all authority to say, no, my God is first and foremost, regardless what you say or what rules are in order. But just because you don't agree or don't like or don't affiliate with that party doesn't give you an excuse to not listen, especially as a Christian. I can understand if other people say, well, I didn't grow up understanding God or Scripture, if they want to throw a hissy fit and break stuff. But you as Christians, whether you've been a Christian for just a little while or you've been a Christian your whole life, you have no excuse. Your duty is to be a model citizen, to live by example. We tell our church, we tell our neighborhood, oh, love on everybody. But then we go and throw a fight and riot because we disagree with something our government did. See, those two don't match, do they? And the world's going to see that and say, well, you told us you love everybody, but yet here you are writing hate letters to our president. Here you are talking horrible about our governor. Yes, you can talk bad about what's being said, what's being done, but when we start dividing and saying, well, I'm allowed to hate this person because of the party affiliation, then people are going to say, that's not very Christian of you, is it? And you know good as I do that people are going to call us out on that. They expect us to live as model citizens, as good examples. It may not always be easy. Believe me, it's not always easy. We want to take up arms. We want to do whatever to fight against it. But God is saying, that's not the time. That's not your place. Your first duty as an American is to be that model citizen. Because, again, even under the reign of that ruthless leader, the godless emperor, Paul is reminding the early church's readers, be in subjection to that government. We don't like that word, but that's what he tells us, be subjection to that government. And he says again and again, reminding us, and I remind you, that no power, no authority, no leader, no prime minister, no president is established other than those that God allows. If he is allowing it, it's in his will. And if it's in his will, he can use it for both good and bad. And he can use the church to add to that, to build onto that, and to make things better. Because these are serving under God. That is their political office. That's their political duty. That's their duty as a human being, serving in that capacity. And if that's where God put them, then maybe, whether we agree with them or not, maybe we should start realizing that it's my duty to listen to obey, up to the point that he doesn't force me to choose country or him over God. And Peter, as we see, he has basically the same thing. He says, submit yourselves to the Lord's sake, to every human institution. He didn't say if this party matches your affiliation. He says every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God, that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. And that adds to what I was talking about earlier. By being a model citizen, people aren't going to have a way out to say, well, you're not being very Christian. Rather, they say, well, I don't see you going and breaking stuff, tearing stuff up just because you disagree. But rather, you're being obedient. You're cleaning up. You're doing what's right for our country. And you're living an exemplified life that does show me a unique love, a unique concern for your fellow Americans and for your country in a way that I didn't think could match. And we can be strong Christian examples by doing those very things. And so when those in authority, again, are obeying God's will, it is easy to say, well, I'll obey whatever they say. I'll do whatever seems right, because these are good men. These are good women. But then when things shift and we're not in agreement, we want any justification to say, God, this is my way out, right? This is my qualification for saying I can disobey, I can break the law, I can break whatever they say. When God says, no, it's still submit to them regardless if you agree with them. Because, again, he doesn't leave us in the room for excuses for disobedience. He tells us that that is our responsibility, to submit to and obey the governments that we are under. And so we, too, are to subject to our governing authorities, our governors, our president, all these congressmen that we say, man, I just can't understand how they're allowing these things or voting these things. I just don't get it. Well, they're still placed over us to maintain order. And so we have to, in a sense, show our devotion to God first by showing a devotion and respect for them. Because we are under obligation to God to be these model citizens, to be subject to these authorities, by obeying laws, yes, paying taxes, by doing what's right. And hopefully people will see that there's something different about us, and that because of our sense of patriotism that leads to obedience, that maybe people will also ultimately see Christ living in and through us. But despite all of that, despite our obedience required, despite a need to be that model citizen, we have to add, and I want to reiterate time and time again, that our first responsibility is to be obedient to God. That is above all. And that's why I drew the line that says, obey government up to this point. If that government, if the American country ever gets to a point where we have to choose our president or choose our country over God, then realize, as Christians, as much as we're called to be model citizens, our first goal, our first purpose, God's will ultimately in our life is first to him, foremost to him, above all. And yes, it may cost you big time, but many men and women have done it and have been rewarded because of it. And so we can do the same thing. Because if we're following God, really, ultimately, the rest should come second nature. The obedience to the laws, obedience to the land, obedience to our government. If we're obedient to God, we'll become second nature, become a part of who we are. If I'm listening to God, if I'm following his example, following His word, then when I look at the laws around me, I don't say, oh, it's holding me back, it's keeping me down, it's not allowing me to get to work on time even though I leave late. You know, whatever our excuses, we say, if I'm listening to God, then these laws don't seem so overbearing. I may not always like all of them, but it's easier for me to be obedient when I'm first and foremost obedient to God. And so our first primary goal, yes, is obeying the law, but it's only a stepping stone. You know, love is the way we get there. And that's really where Paul brings everything together. He says, look, love is the goal. The law provides guidance about how we get there, how we live, and how we love. Because if we're obedient, if we're loving as God's called us to love, and as he says, there's no debt outstanding, then any debt to government doesn't seem so overbearing. Any debt to somebody else isn't so bad to pay because our first goal is love. We're living under the law because we love God, and we understand that God has placed these laws to create order. And if we understand that, living on love, we have an understanding of what the law has and does for us all around us, despite who's in charge, despite what party may have been elected. We still know if we live as Christians, love as Christians, love as God, then the rest, again, it becomes second nature, and it does create a sense of harmony and unity despite disagreements in our country. And so you and I, as Americans in particular, we live in a democratic republic where we have the ability to change, to influence. You know, we vote, we write letters. We're allowed to do that. That's the freedoms we have. That is part of being a good citizen, is getting out and voting, getting out and saying why you voted for that person, why you believe this is an immoral or moral law that they're trying to pass, and getting through to the right people, the right channels to show this is what I believe is right, this is why I believe it, and this is how I can hopefully influence my country. That is a part of being a good citizen. But as Christians, we do that. We vote. We stand up for what's right. But also, first and foremost, we pray for those leaders. Regardless of party, regardless of if you voted for them or not, you pray for them. And you don't pray for them for your own benefit. It's easy to pray for the guy or the girl that you voted in. Oh, thank you, God, you did it for me and for country. But when the person that you didn't vote for wins, you're like, I appreciate that, God. You know, that's not what God says. Pray for them if you voted for them. No, pray for them regardless. Pray for them because their duty carries a large responsibility, that I don't want, a responsibility that they are handling, some of them better than others. So our goal as Christians to be that citizen, to do our part, to get out and vote, to stand up for what's right, but first and foremost, to pray for those leaders. Pray that God gives them wisdom, God gives them understanding, God gives them clarity, and that God enhances their ability to lead and make decisions and not be peer pressured by other congressmen, other leaders to vote one way or the other. Because that happens a lot. They begin to spend so much time with other people that their moral justice gets bent just a little bit, and eventually they begin to give up on things they used to stand up for so strongly. So pray for that strength. Pray for that wisdom. Pray that our leaders never let go of that moral structure that they should stand on and maybe even used to stand on. So as Christians, as Americans, our focus should always be on how we as Christians can live in a way that models the love of Christ. Again, love being the first goal. Love leading to obedience to the law, leading to harmony, leading to unity. So we as Christians live on that love despite who's in charge, despite who our leaders are, and allow this sense of civility and model citizenship outflow from our lives, and that people notice that, people see that, and people see that, man, regardless of who's elected, regardless of the fact that their person lost, they're still obeying. They're not breaking stuff. They're not going up trying to tear stuff up because they disagree, but rather they're trying to create harmony despite who was elected, despite who won. And that's our first goal, to be that model citizen, to portray that love of God. But again, I reiterate, so long as that government doesn't force you to reject your God, force us to turn our back on God, that's the only line that is drawn. It doesn't, again, doesn't give us a way out. If that leader is too forceful, then you can disobey. Paul doesn't say that. He doesn't say, well, because they're Republican, you shouldn't obey them. Because she's a Democrat, you don't have to obey them. He doesn't give us any of that. Rather, he says, be that model citizen. Pray for those leaders. Be the individual that people see a love for God outflowing from them. And when they see that love of God, they see a person who's put God first and put a love of country only under their God and their family. And by seeing that, they will see the love of God. That's what being a good Christian and even a good patriot as a Christian is all about. It's not about this God first mentality or this country first mentality. It's a God first as being an obedient citizen, submitting to our leaders and doing what's right and doing our part in the country that we say we love so much. God's given us these freedoms. So now what do we do to ensure that freedom, to ensure the country we love, the morals we stand up for, continue to be established, can continue to create that order that we live under? So be obedient to God first. That obedience to God leads to obedience to country and leads to us showing a love that sometimes this world can't understand. That's when they're going to see Jesus in our lives. Let's pray. Hey guys, it's AJ Layton, lead pastor at Access Point Church. We're so glad you guys have found us, stumbled upon us, or been long listeners. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our page, share with your friends. We look forward to seeing you next week.